Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heavy Potter City Cast episode 180. How's it going?
With, is this like the 3-year anniversary of the podcast?
I think so. Like, yeah.
Wow. 10-20. That's really cool. Next year it will be 10-2020. Assuming there's a podcast next year.
Assuming there's a planet left.
Assuming, no, I got nothing. That's the biggest I can go. Assuming the sun doesn't collapse. I don't know.
Assuming the universe doesn't, like, turn out to be Elon Musk's asshole.
Assuming no one, like, changes one of the universal constants of the simulation by 0.0001 and we all die. Like, we reality just, like, stops existing.
Yeah, we just, like, melt because, like, physics just, like, completely get thrown off.
So, last week you were talking about flanderization.
Yeah.
And I mentioned Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
I'm watching like the fifth season in like a huge delay because it's only now on like Israeli Netflix. And they made like a universe as a simulation joke. Which was really like off brand for them, but it actually worked.
I feel like that's it. Around like season 5 and 6, they like lean so hard into the flanderization that they lampshade it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying this season. I think it's not as good as the previous ones, for sure. Like, you can tell that this was a show that was, like, resuscitated, basically. But there's still, like, gems in there. Like, the episode where, spoilers, where Captain Holt and Peralta are, like, interrogating that smooth dentist.
Sterling K. Brown.
Yeah, exactly. And it's actually a reference to Homicide, Life on the Street, where the guy who plays Holt was one of the detectives.
Yep.
And there's a brilliant episode just like that with John Buscemi. Not John. What's his first name?
Steve.
Steve. John. What the fuck? With Steve Buscemi. He plays like a psychopath that thinks he's like superior because he's white. Mm-hmm. And he's also, he doesn't crack. And then Pemberton, the detective, he finds a mistake in his like quote of Socrates because he actually has like a degree and he reads ancient Greek. It's a really cool episode, and it's kind of like this one. It's all an interrogation. It like breaks the guy. So that was a nice nod. If you don't know, the guy who plays Holt was like, not you, the listeners, was Pemberton on Homicide, Life of the Streets, which is like the proto cop show, right?
Yep.
it's like The Wire 1.0.
Later on in that season, did you get the Terry police stop episode?
No.
Okay, yeah. That's an episode. So I guess I won't spoil before we get to it.
Yeah, we watch like 2 episodes a day, so I'll get to it pretty fast.
All right.
There's not a lot of content today.
Speaking of getting to it fast, we got to the end of this decade pretty fast, right?
Yeah, oh my god. Wait, are we doing this?
I mean might as well, right? It's on brand.
Yeah.
So a bunch of sites, Pitchfork, Metal Sucks, all have been kind of posting their best albums of the decade lists.
Yep, before the decade is fucking over.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess there's not much left to look forward to. Whatever. I don't take too much issue with that at this point. Like, it's less egregious, mathematically speaking, than doing your end of year list in like September.
Yeah. Which is a thing almost everybody does.
Like, most of the decade is over, right? Anyway, as a listener, if you've listened to, like, any of these episodes, you know that we hate these types of lists.
Yep.
And, like, I just want to say about, like, so the Pitchfork list is, I feel like, a whole other conversation, and we can maybe even bring Nick in for that one. But about the Metal Sucks one. So, if you're not following it, which you're a better person than I am, if you're not. So they were doing like top 25 albums, and they've been polling not just their own writers, but like air quote other industry people, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know the exact. I don't know if they've disclosed exactly like who
they have. They have.
Okay.
Okay. And full disclosure, Jimmy, who's the founder of the blog, was also on that list.
Yeah.
I'm not salty at all that they asked him and not me, by the way.
I
I'm totally yeah,
sure. Whatever. So the top 25 is like, yeah, it's okay. Like, well, it's not okay. Actually, what do I say?
It's
like,
not. It's not okay.
So there's some okay stuff in here. Gorgut's Colored Sands is okay. The Ocean Pelagiel is okay. Rivers of Nile, Where Owls Know My Name, Sunbather, you know, pretty obvious picks.
Yeah. Yob, Cult of Luna, and Julie Christmas. These are all like good albums. Even if you don't like them personally, they're like good albums.
And Black Dahlia Murder's Ritual is pretty good too, I would say.
Yeah.
In fact, it's like my second favorite Black Dahlia Murder album. Like, I think that's kind of a controversial pick for Black Dahlia Murder fans because that album is kind of out of left field one for the band, as far as I understand.
Yeah.
But hey, whatever.
And did we say Rivers of Nile? I was very pleased with that inclusion.
Yes.
But then,
so they do their thing, right? They being like not Metal Slugs, but like...
No, wait, before number one.
No, yeah, I'm before that.
Oh, okay, the other thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they do their thing. And there's shit like Mastodon's Once More Around the Sun.
You have Emperor of Sand. It's right there. It's better in every single way.
Yeah, it is literally like, I mean,
it's the same album, just better.
It is. It really is. And like, Eden hates Emperor of Sand, but even he's able to recognize.
Yeah, no, for sure. I don't hate it. It's fine. I hate that you think it's like the best fucking album ever, but.
And like, fucking Carcass's Surgical Steel is at number two. Are you fucking kidding me? Like,
At the Gates, At War with Reality, that album. No.
Metallica Hardware. I love Hardware to Self-Destruct, but like, come on.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It doesn't belong here.
It like, doesn't hang.
Yellow and Green by Baroness. No. Just no. Like, it's even the wrong Ghost album. Like, it's not even the right Ghost album. I mean, what's its name? Fuck, the one, Meliora?
It's like the recent really one.
No, not the recent one, the one before that. It's like a really good album. I don't even like Ghost, and I really like that album. It's just better than all the other releases, and it's also in this decade. It's just like...
it's just like sigh.
Judas Priest Firepower. Okay, that album is good, but it's not best of the decade. It's just... And the thing is, this is not Metal Sucks, just to be clear, right? Like, we're not mad at Metal Sucks here. A lot of the people on the people who were asked are like Metal Sucks people, but there's like a million people on here. Like literally it's over 50. I didn't count. And it's like very diverse people. If you look at the musicians, for example, you have Vincent from Acacia Strain and people from Allegion, Mutoid Man, Darkest Hour, Neo Obliviscaris, like Pelican. It's really diverse. Even Matt Heafy voted on this. Wes Houch, like, a lot of like Misha, a lot of like famous people from the scene. And then if you look at the managers and the bookers and all these people, these are like people I work with. These are like good people. How did this happen? Guys, what the fuck? This is so bad. And we haven't even talked about the number one pick. So first there's the mandatory, and this is on Metal Sucks, the mandatory joke number one, which was... What is that album?
Morbid
name?
Angels, Illa Divinum Insanus, which, you know, was like a hilariously panned album when it came out, especially by journalists like Metal Sucks.
Yeah. And us, I think. We hated that album as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shitty album. Like, yeah. I mean, I'll say that it is nowhere near as shitty as it's made out to be, but it is pretty shitty. And it's especially shitty considering, like, you know, Morbid Angel were a non-entity for a long time and this is what they came back with.
Yeah. But the joke isn't funny. Right, it's like, no, it's not. It's not funny. It's not original. There's no point in it. And then we started to speculate about like what shitty album will actually be the number one. So you know, the obvious stuff came up, like Tool, and what was the other stuff? Like, you know, big stuff that you'd really expect a list like this to close with. But none of us, and I mean not a single person of us, thought that it would be what it actually ended up being, which is Gojira's Magma. So, like, I want to open with what you said and a lot of people said in the group. If they had chosen Morbid Angel, it would have been more defensible than this.
Yes.
Because at least it would have been, like,
a statement. They legitimately like this album and, like, you know...
Right. And again, it's not metal sucks, right? It's the aggregate.
Yeah.
Whatever. The thing that really irritates me here, and there's a lot of things that irritate me about this, but the main thing is like, this album is nothing. It's not even bad in an interesting way, right? It's not even Lulu, right?
Yeah. It's an okay album, right? It's aggressively okay.
That's the thing. It's bland. The thing I hate about this album, the thing this album pisses me off, the reason it pisses me off so much is not because it's really that bad. It's because it's mediocre and bland, but it's marketed and regurgitated as this like revelatory album. So both like the marketing that was leading up to it, instead of just saying, you know, this is the music that we felt like making, we're proud of it, we like it, this is the direction we wanted to go in, which is more like accessible and radio friendly, and this bad. Is not about the fucking in bad, and this is not about the fucking clean singing like some people in the comments alluded to. I love clean singing, I listen mostly to clean singing, right? The music is just bland, and then worse than the marketing, the way fans look at this album, like it's so unique. And so like people were commenting, we made like, by we I mean Nick, hi Nick, made like a Facebook status about it, saying how this, and we'll talk about this in a second, it's like pointing to how the industry is like completely detached from what's actually interesting in the scene. And people were commenting, well, I'm glad they chose this over some cookie cutter music journalism selection. What? How this is much
the
more?
The music journalism selection, like,
yeah, this is a super music journalism selection. Gojira is like one of music journalists' all-time favorite bands, right? It's like that band you say that you like when you want to make like the music journalist gesture, but you don't actually know any like extreme or weird band, so you say Gojira, right?
Yeah.
Because they're so big and heavy and blah, blah, blah. It's like, and what's more cookie cutter than fucking Magma? It's such a boring fucking album. Like, even the quote-unquote weird parts are so paint by number weird. Like, ooh, here's an odd note inside this pick scrape. Wow, I've never heard that before. Here's an acoustic transition track. It's just so bland. I don't give a shit if they would have picked like a bad album that I disagree with and I don't like. I care that they picked an album that is just so nothing. Yep. It's such a safe pick. And like, I know I'm ranting, but the point is, like Nick said on the status, you know, someone commented and said, what's the big deal? Just move on. This is like a non-issue. Thing is, these are the people who decide what music gets made.
Oh, tastemakers.
Exactly. They decide what music gets put out there. Like, if you look at this list and you look at the PR people who are on it, it's like, Hold Tight, Duo, Freeman, Action, Adam Splitter. These are guys who work with Century Media, Napalm Records. Speaking of labels, like, Earache, Spine Farm, Metal Blade, Napalm, Relapse, Prosthetic, Atlantic fucking Records, Roadrunner. Like, all of these people voted, right? And yeah, these are the people who listen to demos. And they decide who to sign. And they decide who to print. And then you got bookers on here from Live Nation, which I don't know if you know, it's like one of the biggest booking agencies in America. All of these people are the people who decide what music gets, you know, big. And sure, yeah, we're all like, we're dumpster diving in Bandcamp and listening to obscure shit, and we go past these people, but a lot of people don't.
Yep.
Right?
I feel like this is kind of indicative of the state of metal journalism, is in that, like, they're all like 30 plus year old dudes, white dudes, right?
And us included, by the way.
Us included, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And there's this kind of, you know, the typical stereotype of like, after your 30s, you just kind of stop,
you know, listening really to new stuff.
Not just listening to new stuff, but like, putting in the work to kind of dumpster dive, right? As you said, right? And this is kind of indicative of that, of like a really self, perpetuating spiral of these, like, the same types of bands keep getting recognition over and over. And
right. And it keeps tying, you know, back to the stuff that we've been doing in the last 3 or 4 years, doing the aggregate lists, and you just see the trends, right? And you see those bands that kind of like everybody jocks, or that phenomenon where the second album, right? The first album that was actually good, not necessarily the first album for the band, the first big album, which was actually good. And then music journalism jumps on the wagon the album after that.
Yep.
Right? When they've already like lost a lot of their charm, and then they're like, oh, I always knew about this band. They're so awesome. And the last thing I want to say here, like on a personal note, because as you said, it is us as well, right?
Yeah.
This is one of the main reasons, like, I didn't walk away from the blog. I have had plenty of opportunities. I don't know if I've talked about this on the cast before. It's really annoying to run the blog. Like, it's a real hassle. It's a daily hassle. It's not like I run it once a month and then I do something else. Every night I have to be worried about content and the quality of it and what we're publishing and stuff like that. I could have walked away a long time ago. But one of the reasons that I didn't is that I have this network of people like yourself and Trent and Nick and a lot of other people on the blog that are constantly pushing me, right? Sending me new stuff, asking me what I think about it, challenging me. I can like do a thread right now in our Slack and get like 100 recommendations, right? For I mean it literally, 100 recommendations for albums that I've missed in the last 5 years and I need to listen to. And I'm really scared, quote unquote, because there's no actual ramifications, right? I'm really scared of that stagnation.
Yep.
Right? It really worries me. So that's one of the reasons I love doing the blog, that that it keeps me fresh and it keeps me dumpster diving and it keeps me challenged. But hey, you know, Metalsucks posted the individual votes. So you can like, if you care, I don't that much, you can dig in and see what people voted for.
Hashtag ethics in metal journalism.
Yeah. And then the people who voted for Magma should get doxxed and, feathered and tarred.
Yeah.
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 That's proportional. Okay, let's move on before I say
things
that I get. I
mean, to be fair, tarring and feathering is, like, not the end of the world.
Oh, wait, we forgot the best part. Metalsucks also did the readers poll.
Yep.
And guess what came in at number one?
Fucking Magma.
Fucking Magma. Two dudes going to a special place.
I feel like there's some sort of, like, recency bias to this as well, where, like,
yeah.
If this was not Gojira's most recent album, I don't think it would have won. If it had came out in like 2011, I don't think anybody would be remembering about this album by now. Like,
100%. Like, two things I want to say here. One, the best Gojira track published this decade is not even on a Gojira album.
Yeah.
It's Salt and Blood. That track with Devin Townsend and what was it, Friedrich Thordenthal, right?
Yep.
That was like cut from L'Enfant Sauvage, even though it's better than every single track on that album and way better than every single track on Magma. That's one. Two, I just wanted to get that out there. Two, inherently, even if the result of this wasn't crap, these kind of like best of decades lists make even more sense than less sense than the usual end of year lists, right? And yep. You know, as you said, how skeptical we are of these lists. This list makes even less sense because there's so many genres, so many albums that were released in these 10 years, so many like different intentions. Like, how can you compare Judas Priest Firepower and Parallax 2? What the fuck does that even mean? They have, like, as a party album, Firepower is way better. Like, if I'm driving on a highway and I want to listen to something high octane, I'm going to put on Firepower. But if I'm at home and I want to dive into a concept album, I still won't put on Parallax 2 because it sucked. But I find an album like it and play that and not fucking Judas Priest. So these lists are just meaningless.
Yep.
Beyond like Magma winning.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get value out of content, like if you want to find the, you know, album of the decade or whatever, I'd recommend just like finding specific writers who you care about, whose opinions that you feel that you agree with, and then like looking at their lists and like trying to, you know, I think that's a much more productive way. In the aggregate, these things only get to show like how embarrassing like the population that you aggregated is.
Yeah, totally. And the actual answer for how to find an album of the decade is to let go of your need to rank the unrankable.
Yeah,
just move on with your fucking life.
Because the album of the decade is obviously, I was not prepared for the segment, In Waves by Trivium.
Yeah. No one's opinion is objectively correct. Let's move on, everybody. Music is over.
Yes.
Speaking of music
being over. why am I super excited for a Fit for an Autopsy album?
Yeah. Good question. Why are you?
It's good. Like,
so yeah, it's good.
The previous album was really good, and then the new one sounds also super, super good. Like, this band used to be pretty whatever deathcore, and now
middle of
like,
the pack.
Yeah, they weren't bad. They were just like, okay,
for sure. Yeah,
but now they're like amazing.
Yeah,
why?
Hey man, sometimes good shit happens. I know it's rare, and when it happens, it's like a surprise. But yeah.
Yeah, and like every single they've put out has been just mind-blowing, like super, super good. And yeah, so they put out a new single. I forget what it's called. It's like a single word that starts with S, maybe like Seasons. And it's really good. So I'm super excited for this album. The Sea of Fantastic Beasts is the name of the album. It's coming out hopefully shortly. Shepherd is the name of the song. Even the art is super good.
Sea of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. That's a relevant reference. 2019.
I mean, the Fantastic Beasts franchise is still ongoing.
Oh Jesus, it is.
Yeah, it's gonna be like 5 movies, brother.
Oh my god, I love living in 2019. Such a fun time.
I mean, is it not? Isn't it not?
It is. Well, compared to what? The plague?
But yeah, I mean...
if you put it like that, I guess. Anything is better than the 19th century. Let's put it like that. Seriously, that century fucking sucked for everyone. Okay.
I mean, we'll see how this century turns out by the end.
Yeah, that's true. We might beat that record. Yay! Who says millennials never win anything?
I don't know. You tell me.
Everyone says that.
This conversation is quality content.
Hey man, we're committed to the highest level of content.
What is the highest level of content? Is it 3?
It's the Metal Sucks top 25 list. That's like the paragon of...
Okay. Speaking of
top tier... you top just tier, gave up.
Yeah, just I just up. Like okay. my brain gave up, and then like I didn't know how to like pivot back.
Dude, we still have listeners. We have to drive them away. We have to do it somehow.
Speaking of quality content,
yeah,
there's the new Ginger song out. I think it was out last week, but we just like skipped over it. It's good. It's Ginger. Like,
yeah, we're actually hosting the Anatomy of post on the blog this week.
Who wrote it?
Fuck, I don't remember. I think it was the guitar player, but okay. I don't want to commit to that because I don't remember.
No, you have to commit.
They're also like a band that I kind of wrote off as middle of the pack a while ago, but their new stuff is like really engaging and does what they do really well.
Yeah, they keep getting better. Yeah. Cool band. Check Ginger out. We should have asked where the name comes from. I mean, why is it spelled like that?
Oh, true. I feel like it was a disappointing answer. Like, it looked cool or something.
Yep. Hey, at least that's honest, right? And not like we went to a special place.
Not like Magma. Man, yeah.
This episode is fuck a shit post.
That's the entire cast, dude.
Yeah, correct.
Well, there's been a lot of people in Ginger. It's like a lot of people left.
Well, you know what that's say. Really odd.
What do they say?
I don't know. You do.
Fuck. God damn it. Okay. Last thing on
Speaking
the content
of
list.
Female fronted bands.
Fuck you. Fuck you for making that joke. So there's a band called Abigail Williams, and like Noyan has decided to refer to them as Ms. Williams because
it's because years ago I was like at like a FYE and like they had Abigail Williams under Williams comma Abigail, and that's just like forever stuck with me.
You know, it's like a Salem thing, right?
I know what I know what it is.
She's like the first accuser in the Salem trial.
Yeah. No, this is a female fronted band. It's a synthwave, dark pop, indie band.
Sure. Famously with Ken Salsa on. in the Synthwave project.
Is Ken Sorcerer like the only member of the band at this point?
No, I think he has like a rotating cast.
I mean, that's what I meant.
Oh, yeah. I think he's like the only core member still left. The new track is cool.
Cool. Yeah, it is cool.
Yeah, but I mean, that's all I can really say about it, right?
Yeah.
I still haven't been blown away by basically anything that I've heard by this band. I gotta be honest. They've never been like high on my list of black metal acts. But they seem like they're not bad. There's just something very generic is too harsh. But it's like,
no, it feels like inauthentic, maybe.
That still feels too harsh. But it's totally that, like around that semantic field, right? It like feels very obvious, right? Like everything lands the way you'd expect it to land.
Well, like the thing is, like they started out as a metalcore band,
right?
Yeah. And then they had to like extensively reinvent themselves. By the way, like their early stuff, the Legend EP and In the Shadow of Thousand Suns, I thought that stuff was pretty good. Like that was some legit blending of black metal and metalcore, and that I thought that was super cool, actually.
Yeah, I've listened to those albums, but they didn't leave a mark on me. I don't know why. It's hard for me to explain why I'm not into this band. It's like something that I should be into, but I guess I'm kind of weary of this style of like straight up black metal like they're doing now. There's a lot of like experimental stuff in the field now, which I feel kind of deprecates this kind of stuff, but hey, it's the music they want to make, so I'll power to them. And it's not bad, it's just not amazing.
The artwork is amazing though.
Yeah, it's what's his name, we can talk about that actually. It's really interesting. This guy has been like, it's his year, right? There's like so many art days like featuring this guy. What's his name? He has like
is he the well bitch guy? Bell witch guy.
Fucking hell, dude. was that on purpose?
No, that was a slip.
His name is fuck.
Is he he's that guy though? Is he like the Mirror
Reaper
guy? Yeah,
he's that guy. He's from Poland.
Mariusz Lewandowski.
Yes. And he's been on like a bunch of records this year. Obviously, I can't like, but also not this year, like in the recent years, he's worked with Bell Witch before, or Witch, what was that?
Well, Bitch.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's a football player of the same name, so it's actually really hard to look
him up. Oh yeah, he's actually semi-famous. He played in Germany, didn't he?
Wait, is he the football player? I thought
that was... No, like he's not the same guy. He's okay. Not the same guy. Well, that would be pretty cool, actually. So it's interesting to see that even artwork has trends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like not only him. What's the guy's name? Travis something, who does all the OPF Riverside stuff.
Cameron also, Gray.
Is it Gray?
No. Cameron Gray is the big brain guy, like the Born of Osiris. Art,
right.
All that stuff that is like led to the big brain memes.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see, like, you can really see how, and this is something I think people don't appreciate, like, musicians talk to musicians, right?
Yep.
Like, you have a lot of friends in music when you get into music. It makes sense, right? Like, shared interests.
You tour together, right? Like, you
tour together. And then they really influence each other. So Bandcamp even did, like, a post about this guy. So we can use them to like list the number of releases he was on this year. So Mizmor with Kaon had his art. Bell Witch, False, really good death metal band. That's 3 in 1 year, and there's more out there is kind of a lot.
And right? He has a really like stark style.
Yeah, and it fits this like funeral doom, really slow and heavy and usually blackened.
He did the Psychroptic album too.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. A different style of music for his work.
But the artwork is still very him. Like, it's Psychoptic's, like, Kingdom, As the Kingdom Drowns album was by him.
Yeah, it's like this little tidbit. There's not too much to read into it. I think it's just people who share, like, a common taste. It makes sense that they'd also like the same kind of aesthetic. And to be fair, his artwork really is very, quote-unquote, metal, right? It really fits the aesthetic of the genre.
can't wait for the next Gojira album to have artwork done by him.
Yeah. Aren't they in the studio? Who cares?
Sure they are.
Okay. Going to a special place.
I used to like really respect Gojira too. Like,
yeah. I love every single album they made.
Up until L'Enfant Sauvage. Yeah.
Yeah. And they all have different merits. Like, Terra Incognita is really raw and it has almost like proto-ulcerate vibes, you know, like that skronky, chaotic death metal vibes. The Link is really expansive and powerful. The Way of All Flesh is like amazing.
From Mars to Sirius is like super iconic.
From Mars to Sirius, iconic, anthemic, and large. But then like L'Enfant Sauvage is also fine, but it kind of felt like they're trying to do The Way of All Flesh again.
Yeah, but like worse.
Yeah, but not as expressive and powerful. Yeah, they're a really good band. They used to be one of my favorite bands. They still are, but their last two albums are just L'Enfant Sauvage is just fine, and Magma is bad. Okay, cool people time. Extended cool people time.
Yes.
Hey, I want to talk about one thing. Just okay, one thing.
Go ahead.
We have to talk about Disco Elysium.
Okay. Yes. I haven't gotten a chance to play it yet. I'm like knee deep into Destiny. Not actually knee deep, like forehead deep.
I am in love with this game.
So Disco Elysium, in love. Primer. It's a PC RPG made by like a first time developer. It used to be called No Truce with the Furies. And we talked about it with Mikey Goodman on the podcast like way back. Because he's like voicing like the narrator or something in this game.
Yep.
So this is like a detective RPG isometric.
Yeah.
That focuses on kind of conversations.
So I have to be really careful here because you haven't started playing it.
Yes.
And I don't want to spoil anything.
Sure.
But the thing is this. You have the different traits that you have. So the skills are divided into four groups, right? Mm-hmm. But then inside every group, there's a skill. So for example, the physical tree has like electrochemistry and endurance and stuff like that. And intelligence has logic and conceptualization and stuff like that. And then you have, what's it called? It's like a wizard versus sorcerer, like intelligence versus wisdom, right? Wisdom is more like, it's not actually called wisdom. I don't remember what it's called. It's like intuition and following your gut and stuff like that. And then you have motorics, which is like dexterity. The thing is, the skills inside those trees are characters that you can speak to. So when logic like gives you a clue because you summarize something about the world, it gives you it in conversation form. And then you're talking to logic. Right?
Interesting.
Now, nice. They're also referred to that in the game. So, for example, another big thing about the game is that you have modifiers for almost every single task you can make, like +1 or -1, but they don't tell you what those potentials are. So sometimes it's obvious, like you want to shoot something. If you're going to aim first, you're going to have a plus to the roll, right? But sometimes it's like you spoke to Composure and Composure said that, hey, we should take this easy. So now logic is getting a +1 because Composure said to take it easy. It's not you used Composure. Composure said. Mikey plays your lizard brain, where he does the deep Mikey voice.
Of course.
And he plays your limbic system, where he does the high tone shrieking Mikey voice. And they're like separated from all the skills, and they like visit you in dreams and shit. And they're, of course, entirely fucked up. So, and this is where I start to shut up because I'm treading on like spoiler territory. The guy you're playing is a cop, but he got so drunk in like the days previous to the investigation that you have complete amnesia. Just like
Planescape Torment,
which this fucking game is so influenced by, which is amazing because it's one of the best games ever made. Yep. Possibly the best game ever made.
Correct.
The best RPG, hands down. So you walk around trying to piece your identity together. The thing is, you have like a deep-seated self-loathing. You're really hard on yourself. You really hate who you are. So while you're piecing it together, you have a choice. You're trying to like, I'm trying to play like, no, I can do this. I can be better, right? I can fight this. Or you can give in. And giving in gives you bonuses to all sorts of stuff. So that's just the fucking character, right?
Mm-hmm.
The second amazing thing is like the choices. Oh my God. There's so many dialogue choices. There's so many paths you can go down. And I can't tell you anything because I really don't want to spoil anything, but they're so fucking cool. Like autopsies and interviews and breaking into shit. There's no, I haven't encountered combat yet, but I think it's there. Like you have combat skills. You have a skill called Inner Realm, Inland Empire, which is like your intuition, your dreams. That's your dreams. It's called Inland Empire. Why? Because fuck you.
Because that's David Lynch's final movie.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's a reference to that. Is it called that, though?
Yes, I don't remember. It is.
It is. Yeah. So you have like, okay, so esprit de corps. It's like how connected you are to your cop side. So it gives you like bonuses to socializing with cops, but then you're just talking to your partner and he tells you a story about like a gun, and suddenly esprit de corps tells you a mini noir story set in the city you're in. Like this and that detective is in a dark corner when he gets shot. It's completely irrelevant to what you're doing. It's giving you a completely irrelevant side story about this thing. And the last thing, beyond like the options and the diverging branches, everything is written so well. This is a really fleshed out world, which draws on like an existing book, right? By an Estonian novelist. What's his name?
I don't remember.
You send me the link. But also it like really fleshes it out and gives you really small, like small tastes about how it is. I won't say it's not overwhelming. It's like, so much text to read, but it's all really interesting and really well written. And the story is just really engrossing. The investigation is really interesting. The character is terrible. You can die, by the way, like a lot from like random shit that you didn't think would kill you. It kills you because this guy's like on the brink of death anyway. It's amazing. And it's so long as well. It's like 90 hours or something ridiculous like that. So I plan to be playing it like for a long time. But for the first time, I've really had a problem with CRPGs lately, like Pillars of Eternity and Tyranny, all that stuff, because there's so much to do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much of it is just fodder, like just like pointless dialogue. Here,
or just like combat that is tedious.
Yeah, I don't know how combat is here because I haven't done it. If it even fucking exists, I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't.
I think there isn't like...
Yeah.
Any or significant amount of it, as far as I know.
Oh, it's all like for the dialogue, maybe.
Yeah.
So just the sheer inventiveness makes you want to talk to every character. There's like a bouncer who's like, there's another city called, what's it called? Fuck. Semenese Islands or something. He's a Semenese supremacist. Like he does phrenology on you. There's a kid called Kuno who thinks he owns you and like all cops are pigs, but you're his pig. Your partner is like this shy, bespectacled guy, but he secretly admires like combat pilots and fast cars. There's just so many fascinating characters, and everything is dangerous, but everything is also rewarding. And I just can't fucking stop talking about this game because it's so awesome. Seriously, if you like mysteries and CRPGs and stuff like that, you have to play this game.
Yep.
That's it.
I am very interested in this game. I am going to get to it 100% for sure. Like, just like, I'm just so into the stupid fucking Destiny.
Yeah, it's eating your time.
Yep. Yeah, Destiny's okay. Good.
Should I just do my second thing now?
No, I'm going to do the Lighthouse.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to see...
I'm so hyped for this.
The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
And the Lighthouse is the new movie by... Robert Eggers. I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name. Director of The Witch.
Yep.
So I liked The Witch, but I didn't love The Witch. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like too deep into its thing, and it could have used a little bit more, I don't know, anything really.
Yeah.
So then... But the trailer for The Lighthouse looked amazing, right?
Right. And the premise.
And the premise, yeah. So the premise is, well, first of all, the movie's in black and white, and it's like in a square aspect ratio, like the movies of olden times, right? And the movie mainly stars just Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe.
Yep.
And it's basically like both of their best performances, maybe.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, so there is, like, I want to set up expectations correctly for the movie, I guess, in that it's not exactly a horror movie, right? It's kind of like Midsommar, right? Where in Midsommar, it's not that there is horror per se, but more that it's just all weird and unsettling, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say much about what happens in the movie other than that it was fantastic. I was concerned that the kind of visual aspects of the movie would be a gimmick, but they work really well. They do enhance the atmosphere and the horror, because like when you're in black and white, you essentially kind of get to hide things, right? Like, if without saying too much. So it worked incredibly well, I think. And like, I was mildly skeptical because like I didn't really like The Witch, and I was thinking that it would be, you know, too much like that one as well, but no, this one is just fantastic.
Yeah, I'm super hyped. It was screened 2 days ago in Israel and I couldn't go. It's like a film festival. And I hope that it's gonna be screened here maybe twice in like, you know, small cinematheque kind of things. I hope I can make it and see it.
Yep. Well, let me know when you get to see it, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll do like a full deep dive.
Yes, into The Lighthouse. By the way,
up to The Lighthouse?
What's with like lighthouses and like eldritch horror?
Oh, it's because of Lovecraft. Because everything like came from the sea, right? And Dunwich is, you know, the OG ground zero for Lovecraft stuff, is a lighthouse kind of town, right? So I think it kind of stuck with the genre.
But like the specific iconography of the lighthouse.
So if you want to go deeper, and that's what I wanted to say is, well, first of all, the horror that's invoked here, like in Jeff Vandermeer's books where there's a lighthouse, is about size, you know, like something so big you can't even comprehend. And that's the ocean. Right, if you think about it, the biggest thing that we know on this planet is the ocean. Like the single largest object we can like conceptualize is the ocean.
Other than your mama, heyo.
Oh shit. yeah. And it's like an unknown place where deep dark things lurk in the depths, and then the lighthouse is something which peers into it, right? Like carves out like a small slice of light into the ocean, into the dark, into the night. So, and it's on the edge, right? It's isolated. Yep. It's on a cliffside. It's right on the edge of this big, unknown, gigantic thing. And it's
all
like,
by itself.
Yeah. And it's like a brave icon, right? Because it's like shooting its light into the night, right? So I think it's very iconographic. And the last thing, you know, it's a beacon, right? It's something you gravitate towards, and yet it holds like a very faint promise, right? Like think about how frail it is compared to the ocean, right?
Yep.
So I think all those things conspire to make it like a very aesthetically charged kind of icon.
Yep. So you haven't seen Aniara yet still, right?
Yes, because I can't fucking get it.
Is it not available on like iTunes or whatever? That's where I got it.
It's available on the US store of iTunes. Yeah. And the second I log in, it redirects me to the Israel store of iTunes. I have one last chance of like somehow gaming the Amazon store to rent it, but I haven't tried it yet, but like I don't have hope.
In general.
Yeah. In general. And specifically in this case.
It's really good. So I just want to like briefly.
Yeah, go ahead.
Talk about it. So this is a Swedish sci-fi movie based on a like epic poem, actually, weirdly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the premise is that, you know, these people, go on this like huge ship that is supposed to take them to a different planet because obviously the Earth is dying, right? And the ship is like fully featured. It's, you know, it's like a resort, like a transatlantic ship, cruise ship, right? But like very early, like a day or so into their journey, they get hit by some debris that knocks out their power supplies. And they basically lose all thrust capability.
Yeah.
And they get like, they start like spinning out of control into like the depths of space. And they're like, the captain is like, okay, we estimate that in the trip was supposed to take like a few weeks, by the way. The captain is like, okay, in 2 years, we'll be able to cross paths with a planet with which the gravitational well of that planet, we can slingshot ourselves back towards the course.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So like suddenly a 2 week trip becomes like a 2 year long journey. And of course things start to devolve from there.
Yeah.
The main character is like kind of like a therapist. So on ship, there is this, I don't know how to describe it, but like, there's this room that has like this psychic entity in it that is basically when you go there and like you put your head down, you enter this dreamscape where you like remember pleasant memories that you never had, if that makes sense.
And that helps you like survive long space travel?
It basically like is like emotional support for long space travel.
Yeah, yeah.
And she is the operator of this room. But of course, like as the trip suddenly becomes longer and longer, the demand on this kind of starts to increase.
Right.
And the film basically covers like, the passage of time, let's say, throughout this journey.
Mm-hmm.
Is
interesting. It reminds me of a really, really good novella by Ursula Le Guin called The Birthday of the World. I think I even mentioned this on the cast before, where there's a generation ship. And then like the third or fourth generation, they're kind of distant from the mission, right? Because they don't remember Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to decide whether they want to keep going or change course. And she really explores like the idea of like generational politics really, really well. And I think in general, like the generation ship is like a really underexplored concept in science fiction.
The thing is, like, this was not intended to be a generation
ship. Intended, right? Yeah, yeah. And then there's also Tau Zero by Paul Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read that? Such a good story. Right? Just shortly, like, it's a ship that has mass engines. So basically, it collects like minuscule particles and turns them into fuel. But then the brakes stop working.
Yep.
And the more it accelerates, the larger the mass increases, right? Because of how relativity works. So now it can turn bigger objects into fuel. And let's just say you should read it to the end because the scale gets out of whack really, really fast.
The original poem was written in 1956, by the way. It's Swedish poem.
Right. I didn't hear about it before this film, but then when I looked it up, it's like a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That like science fiction aficionados have been aware of for a while, but it's really interesting that they chose that to make a film. I really want to get this movie. I might even...
Apparently, A Fire Upon the Deep references the poem.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
I read that.
Yeah.
Too bad it's written by a libertarian scumbag.
Also, apparently Paul Anderson said Tau Zero was influenced by this poem.
Oh, interesting. Nice. I don't know if you knew it, but Werner Vinge, the guy from A Fire Upon the Deep, is like a libertarian asshole.
Nice.
He's like one of those math will save us from politics, blah blah blah. I had an idea of like actually going to the last operating DVD rental place in Tel Aviv and rent the movie on like a physical media. That would be weird.
Wow, fucking casual.
Yeah. Fucking Stone Age. Okay, last thing I want to talk about. I'm reading the new Joe Abercrombie book.
Yep.
So if you're not familiar with Abercrombie, he famously wrote the First Law trilogy.
Together with Fitch.
Together with whom?
Fitch.
What's the joke here?
Abercrombie and Fitch.
Oh, fuck off. God. And then he wrote three standalones in that setting, and he also wrote like a bunch of other stuff. And it's basically dark fantasy. It's like, what if George R. R. Martin, but more nuance and less over the top shit? And now he's like revisiting that setting. He's starting a new trilogy, and the first book in it is called A Little Hatred. It's interesting. It's like, remember Fable 3?
Yes.
Where they took the fantasy setting and put industry into it?
Yep.
So he's basically doing the same thing. It's like 20 years after the first trilogy, so a lot of the main characters there are still alive, but they're old. And things have started to get industrialized.
Brandon Sanderson did that with the second Mistborn trilogy.
Right, yeah, it's a common trope. It's not a Sanderson thing.
Anyway. I know.
So the interesting thing about Abercrombie is like he knows his history. So, for example, it's like there's Luddites, right? There's like people who are resisting the technology and blowing up engines and shit. And there's like land enclosures like you had in the 19th century, like disenfranchising people from land. And there's a lot of agitation. It's nice so far. Like Abercrombie is good for a very specific thing, right? It's not a very out there or daring writing, but mm-hmm. he writes action very well. And he has interesting characters. And this is exactly the same. And that's maybe my biggest criticism. It's like Abercrombie doing Abercrombie, right?
Yep.
You've got all the tropes, you've got all the styles, you've got everything you would expect from this kind of book, which is not really a bad thing, but I kind of want to see him shake things up a bit more. His Half a King series had like a really interesting twist at the end. I don't know, should I spoil it? Do you plan to read it at some point?
I don't think so. I'll forget anyway.
Yeah, spoilers for like his series. So for the first two books, it's like a Viking book. It's like in Gotland and there's an heir to the throne who loses his throne and everything. But then he starts dropping like really, really slim clues that you need to be really aware of to pick up that it's actually post-apocalyptic. And like society has degraded back to medieval technology.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the third book, like they beat the final army that's against them with like bazookas and assault rifles. They go into like Stockholm, which is the bombed out Stockholm. And they break into like a military bunker, which for them is like magic and relics and whatever. And they get like actual weapons. It's really cool. The setting is really interesting. He does a really good job with it. So I expected like something a bit more interesting here, but he's like playing it safe. But who knows? Maybe I'll regret this and he'll do like a crazy twist at the end of this book. But it's nice. If you're looking for like good fantasy to read, good dark fantasy, then you'd do far worse than this book.
I would indeed.
Sorry?
I don't know.
Okay.
By the way, I also saw Parasite. I briefly wanted mm-hmm. to talk about it. Yeah. Parasite is Bong Joon-ho, South Korean director's latest movie.
Interesting.
It's been making the rounds because like it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes Film Festival.
Mm. Well, so did Joker, didn't it? Or something like that.
No. Like Palme d'Or is like the award, right? Like it's like the mm-hmm. And it's been winning like a ton of awards all over the place. And Bong Joon-ho is like a really esteemed director, right? He did Okja. He did Snowpiercer. He did The Host. He did Memories of Murder. Like
mm-hmm.
also Mother. Like his career is just like full of hits, right? And Parasite is really good, but it's okay. Like mm-hmm. It's not his best movie, I would say. It's a really good movie, but like I don't understand why it like won all these awards. Not that it's bad. I really like the movie, but it was fine. So the premise of the movie is really interesting in that there's this family and they're really poor. But they're like, you know, good people and they're like smart and hardworking, but it's just that, you know, circumstances,
yeah.
It's like two kids, daughter, son, and mother, father, right? The son, he's like college age, by the way. He gets through a friend, he becomes the English tutor to the daughter of like an extremely rich family.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly, he devises to replace all of the help of that family with his own family, but without telling the family that they're related. So, first of all, the rich family has another kid who's younger. He gets this. He tells them that his sister is like a esteemed art teacher, and like they hire her to like teach, you know, art to the kids, like art therapy or whatever. Like they just make some bullshit up. There's the driver. They basically conspires to get the driver fired and get their father hired as the driver. And then finally there's like a live-in maid and they get her fired and like bring their mom in. But again, they all act like they don't know each other, right? So it's like played for laughs. It's pretty comical. But of course, like, as it is typically the case with like a lot of good Korean films, like the tone is like a tightrope, right? It's like walking right between like, well, this is fucked up and like, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
And then like things devolve in interesting ways. Definitely very interesting. And like the performances are fantastic. It's a great movie. You're like really well shot, everything. And like it's basically all about like classism, right? I mean, it's pretty on the nose with a lot of the themes. And there's been like a flood of like, I mean, Korean media has always been kind of highlighting classism as like a plot point.
But I mean, it's a big problem in the country, right?
Yes. Like a huge class disparity.
Yeah.
But like in the past years, there have been like a slew of, you know, high quality films that are specifically about this. But like
Snowpiercer.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same director, right?
Yeah.
Last year, there was a movie called Burning. Which I really, really loved. It's actually based on a Haruki Murakami novel. But the movie actually stars Steven Yeun, you know, the Walking Dead guy.
Yeah.
Burning. And by the way, the main character in both movies is the same actor as Parasite and Burning.
Oh, cool.
But like, I would say that Burning is like a much, much better movie than this one. And Burning also won a bunch of awards, but like not the Palme d'Or. It won like the best foreign language film at the Oscars and it was nominated for the Palme d'Or. Anyway, Burning is fantastic. But if you want to see like one highly acclaimed South Korean movie of the past years about classism, I would recommend Burning.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, that's mostly it.
Cool. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.